Mort crowed as Selena walked back to the papers and books she'd scattered at the other end of the tomb. You'd better clean up the mess you brought down here, or I'll ask the gods to send some wicked beastie after you.
Already happened. Cain beat you to it months ago.
She replaced Damaris in its stand.
Too bad the Ritterak didn't take you off the door when he burst through.
A thought hit her, and she stared at the wall in front of her, where she'd once fallen to avoid being ripped apart.
Who was it that moved the carcass of the Ritterak?
Princess Nehemia, of course.
Selena twisted to look toward the doorway. Nehemia?
Mort made a choking sound and cursed his loose tongue.
Nehemia was here? But I only brought her to the tomb.
Mort's bronze face gleamed in the light of the candle she'd set before the door.
You're telling me that Nehemia came here after the Ritterak attacked? That she knew about this place all along? And you're only telling me now?
Mort closed his eyes. Not my business. Another deceit. Another mystery.
I suppose if Cain could get down here, then there are other entrances, she said.
Don't ask me where they are, Mort said, reading her mind. I've never left this door. She had a feeling it was another lie. He always seemed to know about the layout of the tomb, and when she was touching things, she shouldn't be.
Then what use are you? Brandon just made you to piss everyone off?
He did have a sense of humor like that. The thought of Mort actually having known the ancient Fae King made her quake inside.
I thought you had powers. You can't just speak some nonsense words and have the meaning of the riddle be revealed to me.
Of course not. And isn't the journey more important than the end?
No, she spat,
spewing a concoction of curses that could have curdled milk. Selena tucked the paper into her pocket. She would need to study this riddle at length.
If these items were things that Nehemia was looking for, things that she'd lied about to keep secret, Selena might be able to accept that Archer and his friends were capable of good,
but she certainly didn't trust them to hold an object with the power that the riddle mentioned.
If they were already looking, then perhaps it was in her best interest to find the items before anyone else. Nehemia hadn't figured out that the eye riddle referred to Damaris, but had she known what the three objects were?
Maybe she'd pursued the eye riddle because she was trying to find the objects before the king did.
The king's plans, had they been to find these things?
She picked up her candle and strode from the room. Has the questing spirit seized you at last?
Not yet, she said as she walked by.
Once she found out what the three items were, then maybe she'd consider finding a way to go after them. Even if the only volcanoes she knew about were in the desert peninsula, and there was no way in hell the king would let her go off on her own for such a long trip. It's a pity that I'm attached to this door, sighed Mort. Imagine all the trouble you'll get into while trying to solve the riddle. He was right, and as Selena walked up the winding stair, she found herself wishing that he actually could move about. Then she'd at least have one person to discuss this with. If she did have to go hunt these things down, whatever they were, then she'd have no one to go with her. There was no one who knew the truth. The truth. She snorted. What truth was there now? That she had no one left to talk to? That Nehemia had lied through her teeth about so many things? That the king might be searching for an earth-shattering source of power? That he might already have something like this? Archer had mentioned a source of power outside of magic. Was that what these things were? Nehemia had to have known. Selena slowed, the candle guttering in a damp breeze through the stairwell, and slumped onto a step, bracing her arms on her knees.
What else were you hiding, Nehemia? She whispered into the darkness.
Selena didn't need to turn to know who sat behind her when something silver and glimmering shone in the corner of her eye.
I thought you were too exhausted to come here, she said to the First Queen of Otterlin. I can only stay for a few moments, Elena said, her dress rustling as she took a seat a few steps up from Selena. It seemed a distinctly unqueen-like thing to do.
Together they stared into the gloom of the stairwell, Selena's breathing the only sound. She supposed Elena didn't need to breathe, didn't make any sounds unless she wanted to. Selena gripped her knees.
What was it like? She asked quietly.
Painless, Elena said with equal quiet.
painless and easy. Were you frightened? I was a very old woman, surrounded by my children and their children and their children's children. I had nothing to be afraid of when the time came. Where did you go? A soft laugh. You know I can't tell you that. Selena's lips wobbled. She didn't die an old woman in her bed. No, she didn't. But when her spirit left her body, there was no more pain, no more fear. She is safe now. Selena nodded. Elena's dress rustled again, and then she was on the step beside her, an arm around her shoulders. She hadn't realized how cold she was until she found herself leaning into Elena's warmth. The queen didn't say anything, as Selena buried her face in her hands and wept at last. There was one last thing she had to do, perhaps the hardest and the worst of all the things she had done since Nehemia had died. The moon was overhead, casting the world in silver. Even though they didn't recognize her in her current attire, the night watch at the royal mausoleum hadn't stopped her as she passed through the iron gates at the back of one of the castle gardens. Nehemia wouldn't be entombed inside the white marble building, though. Inside was for the royal family. Selena walked around the domed building, feeling as if the wyverns carved into the side stared at her as she passed. The few people still active at this hour had quickly looked away as she made her way here. She didn't blame them. A black dress and a sheer, flowing black veil spoke enough about her grief and kept everyone at a long, long distance, as though her sorrow were a plague. But she didn't give a damn what the others thought. The mourning clothes weren't for them. She rounded the back of the mausoleum and beheld the rows of graves in the gravel garden behind it, the pale and worn stones illuminated by the moon. Statues depicting everything from mourning gods to dancing maidens marked the resting places of distinguished nobility, some so lifelike they seemed to be people frozen in stone. It had not snowed since before Nehemia's murder, so it was easy enough to spot the grave by the upturned earth before it. There were no flowers, not even a headstone. Just fresh soil and a sword thrust into the earth, one of the curved swords of Nehemia's fallen guards. Apparently no one had bothered to give her anything more, not when she would be retrieved and brought back to Eelway. Selena stared at the dark, tilled earth, a chill wind rustling her veil. Her chest ached, but this was the one last thing she had to do, the one last honor she could give her friend. Selena tilted her head to the sky, closed her eyes, and began to sing. Kaol had told himself that he was only following Selena to make sure she didn't hurt herself or anyone else, but as she'd neared the royal mausoleum, he followed her for other reasons. The night provided good cover, but the moon was bright enough to keep him back, far enough away so she wouldn't see or hear his approach. But then he saw where she had stopped, and realized he had no right to be here for this. He'd been about to turn away when she lifted her face to the moon and sang. It was not in any language that he knew, not in the common tongue, or in Eelway, or in the languages of Fenhair or Melisande or anywhere else on the continent. This language was ancient, each word full of power and rage and agony. She did not have a beautiful voice, and many of the words sounded like half-sobs, the vowels stretched by the pangs of sorrow, the consonants hardened by anger. She beat her breast in time, so full of savage grace, so at odds with the black gown and veil she wore. The hair on the back of his neck stood as the lament poured from her mouth, unearthly and foreign, a song of grief so old that it predated the stone castle itself. And then the song finished, its end as brutal and sudden as Nehemia's death had been. She stood there for a few moments, silent and unmoving. He was about to walk away when she half-turned to him. Her thin silver circlet shimmered in the moonlight, weighing down a veil so concealing that only he had recognized her. A breeze whipped past them, making the branches of the trees moan and creak, setting her veil and skirts billowing to one side.
"Selena," he pleaded.
She didn't move, her stillness the only sign that she'd heard him, and that she had no interest in talking. What could he ever say to repair the rift between them anyway? He'd kept information from her, even if he hadn't been directly responsible for Nehemia's death. If either girl had been more alert, they might have had their own defenses prepared. The loss she felt, the stillness with which she watched him, it was all his fault. If the punishment for that was losing her, then he'd endure it. So Kaol walked away, her lament still echoing through the night around him, carried on the wind like the pealing of distant bells. Chapter 38. The dawn was chill and gray as Selena stood in the familiar field of the game park, a large stick dangling between her gloved fingers. Fleetfoot sat before her, her tail slashing through the long, dried grass that poked up through the remaining layer of snow. But the hound didn't whine or bark for the stick to be thrown. No, Fleetfoot just kept sitting there, watching the palace far behind them, waiting for someone who was never going to arrive. Selena stared across the barren field, listening to the sighing grasses. No one had tried to stop her from leaving her rooms last night, or this morning. Yet even though the guards were gone, whenever she left her room, Ress had an uncanny habit of accidentally running into her. She didn't care if he reported her movements to Kaol. She didn't even care that Kaol had been spying on her at Nehemia's grave last night. Let him think what he would about the song. With a sharp intake of breath, she hurled the stick as hard as she could, so far it blended in with the cloudy morning sky. She didn't hear it land. Fleetfoot turned to look up at Selena, her golden eyes full of questions. Selena reached down to stroke the warm head, the long ears, the slender muzzle. But the question remained. Selena said, "She's never coming back." The dog kept waiting. Dorian had spent half the night in the library, searching in forgotten crevices, scouring every dark corner, every hidden nook, for any books on magic. There were none. It wasn't surprising, but given how many books were in the library, and how many twisting passageways there were, he was a little disappointed that nothing of worth could be found. He didn't even know what he would do with a book like that once he found it. He couldn't bring it back to his rooms, since his servants were likely to find it there. He would probably have to put it back in its hiding place and return to it whenever he could. He was scanning a bookshelf built into a stone alcove when he heard footsteps. Immediately, just as he'd rehearsed, he took out the book he'd tucked into his jacket and leaned against the wall, opening to a random page. "It's a little dark for reading," a female voice said. She sounded so normal, so like herself that Dorian nearly dropped the book. Selena was standing a few feet away, arms crossed. Pitter-pattering feet echoed against the floors, and a moment later Dorian braced himself against the wall as Fleetfoot flung herself at him, all wagging tail and bountiful kisses. "Gods, you're huge," he told the dog. She licked his cheek one last time and sprinted off down the hall. Dorian watched her go, brows raised. "I'm fairly certain that whatever she's about to do, it won't make the librarians happy." "She knows to stick to the poetry and mathematics books." Selena's face was grave and pale, but her eyes shone with faint amusement. She wore a dark blue tunic he'd never seen before, with golden embroidery that glinted in the dim light. In fact, her whole outfit looked new. The silence that settled between them made him shift on his feet. What could he possibly say to her? The last time they'd been this close, she'd grazed her nails across his neck. He'd had nightmares about that moment. "Can I help you find anything?" he asked her. "Keep it normal, keep it simple. Crown Prince and Royal Librarian?"
"Unofficial Royal Librarian," he said. "A title hard won after many years of hiding here to avoid stuffy meetings, my mother, and, well, everything else."
"And here I was, thinking you just hid in your little tower."
Dorian laughed softly,
but the sound somehow killed the amusement in her eyes, as if the sound of merriment was too raw against the wound of Nehemia's death. Keep it simple, he reminded himself.
So, is there a book I can help you find? If that's a list of titles in your hand, then I could look them up in the catalog.
No, she said, folding the papers in half. No, there's no book. I just wanted a walk.
And he'd just come to a dark corner of the library to read. But he didn't push it, if only because she could easily start asking him questions, too. If she remembered what had happened when she attacked Kaol, that is. He hoped she didn't. There was a muffled shriek from somewhere in the library, followed by a string of howled curses and the familiar pitter-patter of paws on stone. Then Fleetfoot came sprinting down the row, a scroll of paper in her jaws.
Wicked beast! A man was shouting. Come back here at once!
Fleetfoot just zoomed on by, a blur of gold. A moment later, when the little librarian came waddling into view and asked if they'd seen a dog, Selena only shook her head and said that she had heard something from the opposite direction. And then she told him to keep his voice down because this was a library. His eyes shooting daggers at her, the man huffed and scuttled away, his shouting a bit softer. When he was gone, Dorian turned to her, brows high on his head.
That scroll could have been invaluable.
She shrugged. He looked like he could use the exercise. And then she was smiling, hesitantly at first. Then she shook her head, and the smile bloomed wide enough to show her teeth. It was only when she looked at him again that he realized he'd been staring, trying to sort out the difference between this smile and the smile she'd given his father the day she'd put Graves' head on the council table. As if she could read his thoughts, she said,
I apologize for my behavior lately. I haven't been myself.
Or she'd just been a part of herself that she usually kept on a tight, tight leash, he thought. But he said,
I understand.
And from the way her eyes softened, he knew that was all he'd ever needed to say. Kaol wasn't hiding from his father. He wasn't hiding from Selena, and he wasn't hiding from his men, who now felt some ridiculous urge to look after him. But the library did offer a good amount of refuge and privacy. Maybe answers, too. The head librarian wasn't in the little office tucked into the walls of the library, so Kaol had asked an apprentice. The gawking youth pointed, gave some vague directions, and told him good luck. Kaol followed the boy's directions up a sweeping flight of black marble stairs and along the mezzanine rail. He was about to turn down an aisle of books when he heard them speaking. Actually, he heard Fleetfoot's prancing first, and looked over the marble rail in time to see Selena and Dorian walking toward the towering main doors. They were a comfortable, casual distance apart, but she was talking. Her shoulders were relaxed, her gait smooth. So different from the woman of shadow and darkness that he'd seen yesterday. What were the two of them doing here, together? It wasn't his business. Frankly, he was grateful that she was talking to anyone and not burning her clothes or butchering rogue assassins. Still, something twanged in his heart that Dorian was the one beside her. But she was talking. So Kaol quickly turned from the balcony rail and walked deeper into the library, trying to shove the image from his mind. He found Harlan Sensel, the head librarian, huffing and puffing down one of the main paths through the library, shaking a fistful of paper shreds at the air around him. Sensel was so busy cursing that he hardly noticed when Kaol stepped in his path. The librarian had to tilt his head back to see Kaol, and then frowned at him.
Good, you're here, Sensel said, and resumed walking. Higgins must have sent word.
Kaol had no idea what Sensel was talking about.
Is there some issue that you need assistance with?
Issue? Sensel waved the shredded papers. There are feral beasts running amok in my library. Who let that creature in here? I demand that they pay.
Kaol had had a feeling that Selena had something to do with this. He just hoped she and Fleetfoot were out of the library before Sensel reached the office.
What sort of scroll was damaged? I'll see to it that they replace it.
Replace it? Sensel sputtered. Replace this?
What exactly is it?
A letter! A letter from a very close friend of mine!
He bit back his annoyance. If it's just a letter, then I don't think that the creature's owner can offer a payment. Though perhaps they'd be happy to donate a few books and
throw them in the dungeons! My library has become little more than a circus. Did you know that there's a cloaked person skulking about the stacks at all hours of the night? They probably unleashed that horrible beast in the library. So track them down and—
The dungeons are full, Kaol lied. But I'll look into it. While Sensel finished his rant about the truly exhausting hunt he'd gone on to retrieve the letter, Kaol debated whether he should just leave.
But he had questions,
and once they reached the mezzanine and he was certain that Selena, Fleetfoot, and Dorian were long gone, he said, I have a question for you, sir.
Sensel preened at the honorific, and Kaol tried his best to look uninterested.
If I wanted to look up funeral dirges, laments, from other kingdoms, where would be the best place to start?
Sensel gave him a confused look, then said, What a dreadful subject.
Kaol shrugged and took a shot in the dark. One of my men is from Terrasen, and his mother recently died, so I'd like to honor him by learning one of their songs.
Is that what the king pays you to do? Learn sad songs with which to serenade your men?
He almost snorted at the idea of serenading his men, but shrugged again. Are there any books where those songs might be? Even a day later, he couldn't get the song out of his head, couldn't stop the chill that went up his neck when its words echoed through his mind. And then there were those other words, the words that had changed everything. You will always be my enemy.
She was hiding something, a secret she kept locked up so tight that only the horror and shattering loss of that night could have made her slip in such a way.
So the more he could discover about her, the better chance he stood of being prepared when the secret came to light.
The little librarian said, walking down the main steps. Well, most of the songs were never written down, and why would they be?
Surely the scholars in Terrasen recorded some of them. Orinth had the greatest library in Aurelia at one time, Kaol countered.
That they did, Sensel said, a twinge of sorrow in his words. But I don't think anyone ever bothered to write down their dirges, at least not in a way that would have made it here.
What about in other languages? My guard from Terrasen mentioned something about a dirge he once heard sung in another tongue, though he never learned what it was.
The librarian stroked his silver beard. Another language? Everyone in Terrasen speaks the common tongue. No one spoke in a different language there for 1,000 years. They were close to the office, and he knew that once they arrived, the little bastard would probably shut him out until he'd brought Fleetfoot to justice.
Kaol pressed a bit harder. So there are no dirges in Terrasen that are sung in a different language?
No, he said, drawing out the word as he pondered. But I once heard that in the High Court of Terrasen, when the nobility died, they sang their laments in the language of the Fae.
Kaol's blood froze, and he almost tripped, but he managed to keep walking and say, Would those songs have been known by everyone, not just the nobility?
Oh, no, Sensel said, only half listening as he recited whatever history was in his head. Those songs were sacred to the court. Only those of noble blood ever learned or sang them. They were taught and sung in secret. Their dead buried by the light of the moon, when no other ears could hear them. At least that's what rumor claimed. I'll admit to my own morbid curiosity in that I'd hoped to hear them 10 years ago. But by the time the slaughter had ended, there was no one left in those noble houses to sing them.
No one, except... You will always be my enemy. Thank you, Kaol got out, then quickly turned away, walking toward the exit.
Sensel called after him, demanding his oath that he'd find the dog and punish it.
But Kaol didn't bother to reply. Which house did she belong to? Her parents hadn't just been murdered. They were part of the nobility who had been executed by the king. Slaughtered. She'd been found in their bed, after they'd been killed. And then she must have run until she found the place where a Terrasen nobleman's daughter could hide. The Assassin's Keep. She learned the only skills that could keep her safe. To escape death, she'd become death. regardless of what territory her parents had lorded over. If Selena ever took up the mantle she'd lost, and if Terrasen ever got to its feet, then Selena could become a powerhouse, potentially capable of standing against Otterlin. And that made Selena more than just his enemy. It made her the greatest threat he'd ever encountered.
Chapter 39. Crouched in the shadow of a chimney atop a pretty little townhouse, Selena watched the home next door. For the last 30 minutes, people had been slipping inside, all cloaked and hooded, looking like nothing more than cold patrons eager to get out of the freezing night. She'd meant it when she told Archer she wanted nothing to do with him or his movement. And honestly, there was a part of her that wondered whether she should just kill them all and toss their heads at the king's feet. But Nehemia had been a part of this group. And even if Nehemia had pretended she didn't know anything about these people, they were still her people. She hadn't lied to Archer when she told him that she'd bought him a few extra days. After turning over Counselor Mullison, the king didn't hesitate to grant her a bit more time to kill the courtesan. A snow flurry gusted up, veiling her view of the front of Archer's townhouse. To anyone else, the gathering would seem like a dinner party for his clients. She knew only a few of the faces and bodies that hurried up the steps, people who hadn't fled the kingdom or been killed by her the night everything went to hell. There were many more, however, whose names she didn't know. She recognized the guard who had stood between her and Kaol at the warehouse, the man who had been so eager for a fight. Not by his face, which had been masked that night, but by the way he moved, and by the twin sword strapped to his back. He still wore a hood, but she could see shoulder-length dark hair gleaming beneath it, and what looked like the tan skin of a young man. He paused at the bottom step, turning to quietly utter commands to the two hooded men flanking him. With a nod, they vanished into the night. She contemplated trailing one of them, but she'd come here only to check on Archer to see what he was up to. She planned to keep checking on him until the moment he got on that boat and sailed away. And once he was gone, once she'd given the king his fake corpse, she didn't know what she'd do then. Selena slipped farther behind the brick chimney as one of the guards scanned the rooftops for any signs of trouble before continuing on his way, to watch one end of the street, if she guessed correctly. She stayed in the shadows for a few hours, moving to the rooftop across the street to better watch the front of the house, until the guests started leaving, one by one, looking for all the world like drunken revelers. She counted them, and marked what directions they went in and who walked with them, but the young man with the twin swords didn't emerge. She might have convinced herself that he was another client of Archer's, even his lover, had the stranger's two guards not returned and slipped inside. As the front door opened, she caught a glimpse of a tall, broad-shouldered young man arguing with Archer in the foyer. His back was to the door, but his hood was off, confirming that he did indeed have night-black shoulder-length hair and was armed to the teeth. She could see nothing else. His guards immediately flanked him, keeping her from getting a closer look before the door shut again. Not very careful, not very inconspicuous. A moment later, the young man stormed out, hooded once more, his two men at his side. Archer stood in the open doorway, his face visibly pale, arms crossed. The young man paused at the bottom of the steps, turning to give Archer a particularly vulgar gesture. Even from this distance, Selena could see the smile that Archer gave the man in return. There was nothing kind in it. She wished she'd been close enough to hear what they'd said, to understand what this was all about. Before, she would have trailed the young stranger to seek out the answers. But that was before. Now she didn't particularly care. It was hard to care, she realized as she started the trek back to the castle. Incredibly hard to care, when you didn't have anyone left to care about. Selena didn't know what she was doing at this door. Even though the guards at the foot of the tower had let her pass after checking her thoroughly for weapons, she didn't doubt for one moment that word would go right to Kaol. She wondered if he'd dare stop her, if he'd ever dare to utter another word to her.
last night, even from the distance at the moonlit graveyard. She'd seen the still-healing cuts on his cheek. She didn't know whether they filled her with satisfaction or guilt. Every little bit of interaction was draining, somehow. How exhausted would she be after tonight? Selena sighed and knocked on the wooden door. She was 5 minutes late, minutes she'd spent debating whether she truly wanted to accept Dorian's offer to dine with him in his rooms. She'd almost eaten dinner in Rifthold instead. There was no answer to her knock at first, so she turned away, trying to avoid looking at the guards posted on the landing. It was stupid to come here anyway. She had just taken a step down the spiral staircase when the door opened. "You know, I think this is the first time you've been to my little tower," Dorian said. Foot still in the air, Selena collected herself before looking over her shoulder at the Crown Prince. "I was expecting more doom and gloom," she said, walking back to the door. "It's quite cozy." He held the door open and nodded to his guards. "No need to worry," he told them as Selena walked into the prince's chambers. She'd expected grandeur and elegance, but Dorian's tower was, well, cozy was a good way to describe it. A bit shabby, too. There was a faded tapestry, a soot-stained fireplace, a moderate-sized four-poster bed, and a desk heaped with papers by the window. And books. Stacks and mountains and towers and columns of books. They covered every surface, every bit of space along the walls. "I think you need your own personal librarian," she muttered, and Dorian laughed. She hadn't realized how much she missed that sound. Not just his laugh, but her own, too. Any laugh, really. Even if it felt wrong to laugh these days, she missed it. "If my servants had their way, these would all go to the library. They make dusting rather hard." He stooped to pick up some clothes he'd left on the floor. "From the mess, I'm surprised to hear you even have servants." Another laugh as he carried the pile of clothes toward a door. It opened just wide enough to reveal a dressing room nearly as big as her own, but she saw no more than that before he chucked the clothes inside and shut the door. Across the room, another door had led to a bathing chamber. "I have a habit of telling them to go away," he said.
"Why?"
She walked to the worn red couch before the fireplace and pushed off the books that were piled there.
"Because I know where everything in this room is. All the books, the papers. And the moment they start cleaning, those things get hopelessly organized and tucked away, and I can never find them again."
He was straightening the red cloth of his bedspread, which looked rumpled enough to suggest he'd been sprawled across it until she'd knocked. "Don't you have people who dress you? I would have thought that Roland would be your devoted servant, at least." Dorian snorted, plumping his pillows.
"Roland's tried. Thankfully, he's been suffering from awful headaches lately and has backed off."
That was good to hear. Sort of. The last she'd bothered to check, the Lord of Mia had indeed become close to Dorian. A friend, even.
"And," Dorian went on, "aside from my refusal to find a bride, my mother's greatest annoyance is my refusal to be dressed by lords eager to win my favor."
That was unexpected. Dorian was always so well-dressed that she assumed he had people doing it for him. He went to the door to tell the guards to have their dinner brought up. "Wine?" he asked from the window, where a bottle and a few glasses were kept. She shook her head, wondering where they would even eat their food. The desk wasn't an option, and the table before the fireplace was a miniature library on its own. As if in answer, Dorian began clearing the table.
"Sorry," he said sheepishly. "I meant to clear a space to eat before you got here, but I got wrapped up in reading."
She nodded, and silence fell between them, interrupted only by the thud and hiss of him moving books.
"So," Dorian said quietly, "can I ask why you decided to join me for dinner? You've made it pretty clear that you didn't want to spend any time with me, and I thought you had work to do tonight."
Actually, she'd been downright awful to him, but he kept his back to her, as though the question didn't matter. And she didn't quite know why the words came out, but she spoke the truth anyway. "Because I have nowhere else to go." Sitting in her rooms in silence made the pain worse, Going to the tomb only frustrated her, and the thought of Kaol still hurt so badly she couldn't breathe. Every morning she walked Fleetfoot by herself, then ran alone in the game park. Even the girls who had once lined the garden pathways waiting for Kaol had stopped showing up. Dorian nodded. Looking at her with kindness, she couldn't stand.
Then you will always have a place here.
While their dinner was quiet, it wasn't lachrymose. But Dorian could still see the change in her, the hesitation and consideration behind her words, the moments when she thought he wasn't looking and an endless sorrow filled her eyes. She kept talking to him, though, and answered all his questions.
Because I have nowhere else to go.
It wasn't an insult, not the way she'd said it. And now that she was dozing on his couch, the clock having recently chimed two, he wondered what was keeping her from going back to her own rooms. Clearly, she didn't want to be alone. And maybe she needed to be in a place that didn't remind her of Nehemia. Her body was a patchwork of scars. He'd seen it with his own eyes. But these new scars might go deeper. The pain of losing Nehemia, and the different, but perhaps just as agonizing, loss of Kaol. An awful part of him was glad she'd cut out Kaol. He hated himself for it.
There has to be something more here, Selena said to Mort as she combed through the tomb the following afternoon.
Yesterday she'd read the riddle until her eyes ached. Still, it offered no hint about what the objects might be, where precisely they were concealed, or why the riddle had been hidden so elaborately in the tomb.
Some sort of clue, something that connects the riddle to the rebel movement and Nehemia and Elena and all the rest.
She paused between the two sarcophagi. Sunlight spilled in, setting the dust motes shimmering.
It's staring me in the face, and I know it.
I'm afraid I can't be of service, Mort sniffed. If you want an instant answer, you should find yourself a seer or an oracle. Selena slowed her pacing.
You think if I read this to someone with the gift of clairvoyance, they might be able to see some different meaning that I'm missing?
Perhaps, though as far as I know, when magic vanished, those with the gift of sight lost it too.
Yes, but you're still here.
So? Selena looked at the stone ceiling as if she could see through it, all the way to the ground above.
So perhaps other ancient beings might retain some of their gifts, too.
Whatever it is you're thinking, I guarantee it's a bad idea. Selena gave him a grim smile.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Chapter 40 Selena stood before the caravans, watching as the tents were taken apart. Fortunate timing. She ran a hand through her unbound hair and straightened her brown tunic. Finery would have attracted too much attention, and even if it was just for an hour, she couldn't help but savor the feeling of anonymity, of blending in with the carnival workers, these people who had the dust of 100 kingdoms on their clothes.
To have that sort of freedom, to see the world bit by bit, to travel each and every road. Her chest tightened.
People streamed by, hardly glancing at her as she made her way to the black wagon. This could easily be folly, but what harm was there in asking? If Yellowlegs truly was a witch, then perhaps she had the gift of sight. Perhaps she could make sense of the riddle in the tomb. When Selena reached the wagon, it was mercifully devoid of patrons. Baba Yellowleg sat on the top stair, smoking a long bone pipe whose bowl was shaped like a screaming mouth. Pleasant.
Come to look in the mirrors, she said, smoke spilling from her withered lips. Done running from fate at last?
I have some questions for you.
The witch sniffed her, and Selena fought the urge to step back.
You do indeed stink of questions. And the Staghorn Mountains. From Terrison, are you? What's your name?
Selena stuck her hands deep in her pockets.
Lillian Gordana.
The witch spat on the ground.
What's your real name, Lillian?
Selena stiffened. Yellowlegs crowed with laughter.
Come, she cawed. Want to have your fortune told? I can tell you who you'll marry, how many children you'll have, when you'll die.
If you're indeed as good as you claim, you know I'm not interested in those things.
I'd like to talk to you instead, Selena said, flashing the 3 gold coins in her palm.
Cheap goat,
Yellowleg said, taking another long drag from the pipe.
That's all my gifts are worth to you?
Perhaps this would be a waste of time, and money, and pride.
Selena turned away with a scowl, shoving her hands into the pockets of her dark cloak.
Wait,
Yellowleg said.
Selena kept walking.
The prince gave me 4 coins.
She paused and looked over her shoulder at the crone. A cold, clawed hand gripped at her heart. Yellowleg smiled at her.
He had such interesting questions, too. He thought I didn't recognize him, but I can smell Havilyard blood a mile off. 7 gold pieces and I'll answer your questions, and tell you his.
She'd sell Dorian's questions to her? To anyone? That familiar calm went through her.
How do I know you're not lying?
Yellowleg's iron teeth glinted in the light of the torches.
It would be bad for business if I were branded a liar. Would it make you more comfortable if I swore on one of your soft-hearted gods? Or perhaps on one of mine?
Selena studied the black wagon, swiftly braiding her hair back. 1 door, no back exit, no sign of trick panels. No way out, and plenty of warning in case someone came in. She checked her weapons. 2 long daggers, a knife in her boot, and 3 of Philippa's deadly hairpins. More than enough. Make it 6 coins, Selena said softly, and I won't report you to the guard for trying to sell the prince's secrets.
Who says the guard won't be interested in them, too? You'd be surprised how many people want to know what truly interests the prince of the realm.
Selena slammed 6 gold coins onto the step beside the tiny crone.
3 pieces for my questions, she said, bringing her face as close to Yellowleg's as she dared.
The reek from the woman's mouth was like carrion and stale smoke.
And 3 for your silence about the prince.
Yellowleg's eyes gleamed, her iron nails clinking together as she stretched out a hand to grab the coins.
Get in the caravan.
The door behind her swung open soundlessly. A dark interior lay beyond, speckled with patches of glimmering light. Yellowleg snuffed out her bone pipe. She'd been hoping for this, to get inside the caravan, and thus avoid having anyone see her with Yellowleg's. The old woman groaned as she stood, a hand braced on her knee.
Care to tell me your name now?
A chill wind blew from within the caravan, sliding along Selena's neck. Carnival trick.
I'll ask the questions, Selena said, and stalked up the steps into the caravan.
Inside, there were a few measly candles, whose light flickered along row after row, stack after stack, of mirrors. They were every shape, every size, some leaning against the walls, some propped against each other like old friends, some little more than shards clinging to their frames. And everywhere else, wherever there was a bit of space, were papers and scrolls, jars full of herbs or liquids, brooms. Junk. In the gloom, the caravan stretched on much wider and longer than should have been possible. A winding path had been made between the mirrors, leading into the dark, a path that Yellowleg's was now treading, as if there were anywhere to go inside this strange place.
This can't be real. It must be an illusion of the mirrors.
Selena glanced back toward the wagon door in time to see it snick shut. Her dagger was out before the sound had finished echoing through the wagon. Ahead, Yellowleg's chuckled, lifting the candle in her hand. Its holder seemed to be shaped like a skull mounted on some sort of longer bone.
Tacky, cheap carnival tricks,
Selena told herself again and again, her breath clouding in the chill air inside the wagon. None of it was real, but Yellowleg's, and the knowledge she offered, truly was.
Come along, girl. Come sit with me, where we might talk.
Selena carefully stepped over a fallen mirror, keeping an eye on the bobbing skull lantern, and on the door. Any possible exits,
Not as far as she could see, but perhaps there was a trap door in the floor. And how the woman moved. Surprisingly fast, she realized, and hurried to catch up to Yellowlegs. As she strode through the forest of mirrors, her reflection shifted everywhere. In one, she appeared short and fat. In another, tall and impossibly thin. In another, she stood upside down, and in yet another, she walked sideways. It was enough to give her a headache.
"Done gawking," Yellowlegs said.
Selena ignored her, but sheathed her dagger as she followed the woman into a small sitting area before a dim, grated oven. No reason to have her weapon out, not when she still needed Yellowlegs to cooperate. The sitting area lay in a rough circle of cleared junk and stacks of mirrors, with little more than a rug and a few chairs to make it hospitable. Yellowlegs hobbled over to the raised hearthstone, yanking a few logs from a tiny stack perched on the rim. Selena remained on the edge of the worn red rug, watching as Yellowlegs threw open the iron grate of the oven, tossed in the wood, and slammed the grate shut again. Within seconds, light flared, made brighter still by the surrounding mirrors.
"The stones of this oven," Yellowlegs said, patting the curved wall of dark bricks like an old pet, "came from the ruins of the Kraken capital city. The wood of this wagon was hewn from the walls of their sacred schools. That's why my wagon is unusual inside."
Selena said nothing. It would have been easy to dismiss it as a bit of carnival dramatics, except she was seeing it for herself.
"So," Yellowlegs said, remaining standing as well, despite the aged wooden furniture scattered around them. "Questions."
Even though the air in the wagon was chill, the burning oven somehow made it instantly warm, warm enough for Selena's layers of clothing to be uncomfortable. She'd been told a story once, on a hot summer night in the Red Desert, a story about what one of the long-lost Iron Teeth witches had done to a young girl. What had been left of her? Gleaming white bones, nothing more. Selena glanced at the oven again and angled herself closer to the door. Across the small sitting area, more mirrors waited in the gloom, as if even the light of the fire couldn't reach them. Yellowlegs leaned closer to the grate, rubbing her gnarled fingers in front of it. The firelight danced along her iron nails.
"Ask away, girl."
What had Dorian wanted to know so badly? Had he come inside this strange, smothering place? At least he'd survived. If only because Yellowlegs wanted to use whatever information she'd gleaned from him. Foolish, foolish man. Was she any different, though? This might be her only chance to learn what she needed to know, despite the risk, despite how messy and complicated the aftermath might be.
"I found a riddle, and my friends and I have been debating its answer for weeks. We even have a bet going about it," she said as vaguely as she could. "Answer it, if you're so clever and all-knowing. I'll toss in an extra gold coin if you get it right."
"Impudent children, wasting my time with this nonsense."
Yellowlegs watched the mirrors now, as if she could see something Selena couldn't. Or as if she's already bored. Some of the tightness in her chest loosening, Selena pulled the riddle from her pocket and read it aloud. When she was done, Yellowlegs slowly turned her head to Selena, her voice low and rough.
"Where did you find that?"
Selena shrugged.
"Give me the answer and I might tell you. What sort of objects does this riddle describe?"
"Word keys,"
Yellowlegs breathed, eyes glowing.
"It describes the three word keys to open the word gate."
Cold slithered down Selena's spine. But she said, with more bravado than she felt,
"Tell me what they are. The word keys, the word gate. For all I know, you might be lying about the answer. I'd rather not be made a fool of."
"This information is not for the idle games of mortals," Yellowlegs snapped.
Gold gleamed in Selena's palm.
"Name your price."
The woman studied her from head to toe, sniffing once.
"Nameless is my price," Yellowlegs said. "But gold will do for now."
Selena set 5 extra gold coins down on the hearthstone, the heat from the flame singeing her face.
Such a small fire, but she was already slick with sweat.
"Once you know this, there is no unknowing it," the witch warned.
And from the gleam in Yellowlegs' eyes, Selena knew that the old woman hadn't bought her lie about the bet for one heartbeat. Selena took a step closer.
"Tell me."
Yellowlegs looked toward another mirror.
"The word governs and forms the foundation of this world. Not just Aurelia, but all life. There are worlds that exist beyond your knowledge. Worlds that lie on top of each other and don't know it. Right now, you could be standing on the bottom of someone else's ocean. The word keeps these realms apart."
Yellowlegs began to hobble around the sitting area, lost in her own words.
"There are gates, black areas in the word that allow for life to pass between worlds. There are word gates that lead to Aurelia. All sorts of beings have come through them over the eons. Benign things, but also the dead and foul things that creep in when the gods are looking elsewhere."
Yellowlegs disappeared behind a mirror, her uneven steps echoing along.
"But long ago, before humans overran this miserable world, a different sort of evil broke through the gates. The Vaag. Demons from another realm, bent on the conquest of Aurelia, and with the force of an endless army behind them. In Wendlin, they fought against the Fae. Try as the immortal children might, they could not defeat them. Then the Fae learned that the Vaag had done something unforgivable. They had taken a piece of a word gate with their dark magic and split it into three slivers. Three keys. One key for each of their kings. Using all three at once, the Vaag kings were able to open that word gate at will, to manipulate its power to strengthen their forces, to allow an endless line of soldiers to pour into the world. The Fae knew that they must stop it.
Selena stared at the fire, at the mirrors, at the darkness of the wagon around her. The heat was smothering now.
"And so, a small band of Fae set out to steal them from the Vaag kings," Yellowlegs said, her voice coming nearer again. "It was an impossible task. Most of those fools didn't return. But the word keys were indeed retrieved, and the Fae Queen Maeve banished the Vaag to their realm. Yet for all her wisdom, Maeve couldn't discover how to put the keys back in the gate, and no forge, no steel, no weight could destroy them. So Maeve, believing that no one should have their power, sent them across the sea with Brannan Galathinius, first king of Terrasen, to hide on this continent. And thus the word gate remained protected, its power unused."
Silence fell. Even Yellowlegs' hobbling steps had slowed.
"So the riddle is a map to where the keys are hidden?" Selena asked,
trembling now as she realized just what kind of power Nehemia and the others had been after. Worse, what the king might be after.
"Yes."
Selena licked her lips. "What might one do with the word keys?"
"The person who holds all three word keys would have control over the broken word gate. And all Aurelia. They would be able to open and close the gate at will. They could conquer new worlds or let in all sorts of life to bend to their cause. But even one key could make someone immensely dangerous. Not enough power to open the gate, but enough to be a threat. You see, the keys themselves are pure power. Power to be shaped as the wielder wills it. Tempting, isn't it?"
The words echoed through her, blending with Elena's command to find and destroy the source of evil.
Evil.
Evil that had arisen 10 years ago, when a whole continent had suddenly found itself at mercy of one man. A man who had somehow become unstoppable. A source of power that existed outside of magic.
"It can't be."
Yellowlegs only let out a confirming chuckle. Selena kept shaking her head, her heart beating so violently she could hardly breathe.
"The king has some of the word keys? That's how he was able to conquer the continent so easily?
But if he'd already done that, then what further plans did he have?"
Perhaps, Yellowleg said. If I were to wager my hard-earned gold, I'd say he has at least one.
Selena scanned the dark, the mirrors, but saw only versions of herself looking back. She heard nothing but the crackling of the fire in the oven and her own uneven breathing. Yellowlegs had stopped moving.
Is there anything else?
Selena demanded. No response from the old woman.
So you're going to take my money and run?
Selena eased toward the winding path through the mirrors and the door that now seemed impossibly far away.
What if I still have questions?
Her own movements in the mirror sent her nerves jumping, but she kept alert and focused, reminding herself what she had to do. She drew both her daggers.
You think steel can hurt me?
Came a voice that slithered across each mirror until its origin was everywhere and nowhere. Here I was, thinking we were having a grand time, Selena said, taking another step.
Bah, who can have a grand time when your guest is planning to kill you?
Selena smiled.
Isn't that why you're moving toward the door? Yellowlegs went on. Not to escape, but to make sure I don't get past your clever, wicked daggers.
Tell me who else you've sold the prince's questions to, and I'll let you go. Earlier, she'd been about to walk away, about to leave, when Yellowlegs' mention of Dorian had stopped her cold. Now she had no choice about what she had to do, what she would do to protect Dorian. It was what she'd realized last night. She did have someone left. One friend. And there was nothing she wouldn't do to keep him safe.
And if I say that I've told no one?
I wouldn't believe you. Selena spied the door at last. No sign of the witch. She paused, roughly in the center of the wagon. It would be easier to catch the woman here, easier to make it quick and clean.
Pity, Yellowleg said. And Selena angled herself toward the disembodied voice.
There had to be some hidden exit, but where? If Yellowlegs got out, if she told anyone what Dorian had asked, whatever it might be, if she told anyone what Selena had asked. All around Selena, her reflection shifted and glimmered. Quick. Clean. Then she'd be gone.
What happens, Yellowlegs hissed, when the hunter becomes the hunted?
From the corner of her eye, Selena glimpsed the hunched form, chains sagging beneath the gnarled hands. She whirled toward the crone, dagger already flying. To disable, to get her down so she could... The mirror shattered where Yellowlegs had been standing. Behind her there was a heavy clink and a satisfied caw of laughter. For all her training, Selena wasn't fast enough to duck before the heavy chain whipped across the side of her head, and she slammed face first into the floor. Chapter 41 Kaol and Dorian stood on a balcony and watched the carnival be dismantled bit by bit. It would leave tomorrow morning, and then Kaol could finally have his men back to doing useful things, like making sure no other assassins got into the castle. But Kaol's most pressing problem was Selena. Late last night, after the royal librarian had gone to bed, Kaol had returned to the library and found the genealogy records. Someone had gotten them all out of order, so it had taken him a while to locate the right one. But he at last found himself staring at the list of Terrasen's noble houses. None of them bore the name of Sardothian, though that was little surprise. Part of him had always known that wasn't Selena's true name. So he'd made a list. A list that now sat in his pocket, burning a hole through it, of all the noble houses she might have come from, houses with children at the time of Terrasen's conquest. There were at least six families that had survived. But what if she hailed from one that had been entirely slaughtered? When he had finished writing down the names, he was no closer to figuring out who she really was than he'd been at the start. "So are you going to ask me whatever it is you dragged me out here to ask? Or am I just going to enjoy freezing my ass off for the rest of the night?" Dorian said. Kaol raised a brow, and Dorian gave him a slight smile. "How is she?" Kaol asked. He'd heard that they'd had dinner,
and that she hadn't left his rooms until the middle of the night. Had it been a deliberate move on her part? Something to throw in his face, make him ache just a bit more?
Coping, Dorian said. Coping is